Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Home Secretary Suella Braverman says the government's criminal justice bill to be announced in today's King's Speech will see laws keep pace with criminals. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has made law and order a central pillar of the speech, including already announced proposals for killers convicted of the most horrific murders to expect whole life orders. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said Israel will have overall security responsibility in the Gaza Strip for an indefinite period after its war with Hamas. It was the clearest indication yet that Israel plans to maintain control over the coastal enclave. And finally, it's estimated that 37% of us expect to spend less on Christmas gifts this year. Beth Johnson, a professor of television and media, has been looking at this year's Christmas adverts.
Not showing the really big, expensive things, but getting people into the online or physical store to think about treating the people that they love.
That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Ricky Williams.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £14 million.
Now that calls for a dance, Dermot.
Do I have to?
You can limbo. That's it.
Oh, thanks. Just call me Dermot Olimbo.
Very good.
Get that Euro Millions feeling tonight. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
Thanks for tuning in to Colourful. Today we're tackling a crucial issue: prostate cancer in the UK's black community. Did you know that black men are twice as likely to be at risk? That's where the InfoPool comes in. It's a vital resource jointly developed with black men, their partners and organisations like Can Survive UK, Be Me Against Cancer and Cancer Black Care. The InfoPool offers easy to understand info on prostate cancer risks and testing. But it's not just facts. It's real stories from real people like Wayne, David, Anthony and many others, sharing their prostate cancer journeys, helping you to make informed decisions. Visit theinfopool.co.uk, learn from the community's experiences and share your own story when you're ready. Together we can raise awareness and take control of our health. Visit theinfopool today. Stay tuned to Colourful for more empowerment content and music that speaks to our community. We're in this together.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2022 and 2023, we provided £6.5 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Africa in Focus is sponsored by Dermadew Lotion. Visit dermashark.co.uk.
Colorful Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or even good evening, depending on the time zone that you're listening to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus, and I'm your host, Julius Baluto. Today is a wonderful day. We got a lot, you know, lined up for you. Great stuff. You keep it colourful, keep it colourful, and we are coming to you from the heart of London to wherever you are in the world on Colourful Radio. But first up, let's have a taste of what's to come.
I kill you, Allahu Akbar.
Take it up with the production company, eh?
سوفينا حالمي أي روان على الشباب كوماندينا ورستان لكن رجس هذا المروان هذا طورة وجلنا.
And action.
Do you believe your cause is justified?
Interview GNN يولي دوا الشباب. أمسيت نامجو.
Today you will see heaven.
Today in the studio we are with Ahmed Farah. He's a movie director of Alanle, I hope I said it correctly. Did Ahmed I say Farah. It correctly? Ahmed. Alanle.
Ayanle, yes.
Ayanle, yes. Ayanle. Yeah. Ayanle. Is an amazing movie that's trading, and you know, it's based in Kenya, which is amazing. And Ahmed, you know, you are welcome to the show. Say hello to our listeners and introduce yourself better than I have.
Hello, my name is Ahmed Farah. I'm the director of Ayanle.
And, okay, yeah. Is this your first movie that you have done?
In terms of story, mm-hmm. Mostly I worked on documentaries. Okay. So this is actually the first time that I make a film, feature film. I've done a couple of shorts here and there, but this is the first, yeah.
Okay. Maybe what other documentaries have you done before? For our benefit of our listeners.
Documentaries?
Yeah.
I used to work with Channel 4 News, also with Al Jazeera, and done a couple of videos for CNN. But mainly, I used to contribute to Channel 4 News and sometimes also BBC. Stories that I've done are, in South Africa. We've done in Kenya, Zambia, Mozambique. So mainly human interest, stories about 10 to 12 minutes. Sometimes it's in news, like a 2.5 minute.
Okay, let's come back to Ayanle. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic movie. I watched it, by the way. It's amazing. It's
thank you.
Yeah, brought back wonderful memories of Nairobi, the capital city of Kenya.
Yeah,
it's knowing Kenya and knowing how the landscape, the whatever is acting and filming has been, it's a terrain that I'm aware of. I'll give you an example. Way back, because I'm formerly a screen actor, a screenwriter in Kenya as well. Mm. So I remember once we used to go out and filming on location, and you found some people who never knew where acting started and where real life began. And they mixed the two. And they'll see you, and if, for heaven's sake, if you happen to have acted as a murderer the previous night, people on the street, they'll see you and they'll run away. They say, I saw him kill.
Wow.
So how easy was it to film in the Nairobi or in Kenya generally?
Now, recent years, Kenya, they don't do a lot of movies, but a lot of TV series. So there's always production going on one part of the country of the other part. People are familiar with this, with the production and films. They know it. Even though sometimes you'll have to struggle with the audience, like gathering around the camera, just the curiosity to see what is happening. I wish they did a lot more films, but I think it's getting better now, and people are familiar with the process. So if the camera is there, people are walking, they just pass, and they don't stop there, just watching and what's happening here. It's getting better.
It's getting better.
It's getting better, yeah.
Yeah, because I've seen a couple of amazing movies on Netflix and all that. I quite like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's improved quite a lot. It's not those days. Those days a long time ago when those things used to happen. It's changed. And because of social media, it's not just one person. There's so many cameras out there, from vloggers,
yeah, with
the YouTube channels.
Yeah, especially, YouTubers. It's. I think with social media, especially TikTok now, everyone became kind of an actor. They are creating stories throughout, whether they do it in the living room, in the kitchen. So they keep posting all the stories. So people are, learning how to perform in front of the camera. So it's easier for them. They're not camera shy anymore. So it's easy to find actors who are able, to perform in front of the camera. So it helped a lot.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So let's, in terms of Ayanle, of course, what's the story about?
The story of Ayanle, it's not one story. It's multiple stories put together in, one location and then told through one person. Story is inspired by a true event. in the beginning 2000, you know, the piracy was in high peak. Then, you know, journalists used to come, you know, to Kenya or to go to Somalia. But it wasn't always easy to go to Somalia. So they're looking stories related to piracy. And unable to tell that story, they are dependent on Somali fixers that can connect to the journalists, you know, like to the local community. So these guys are the hustlers, you know, they understood there is, you know, money to be made in this whole business. And the journalists are mostly desperate. They want a story. So they gave a couple of guys, you know, like a good story. And then, you know, how the journalists are, they talk and like, who was your fixer? You know, this and this fixer. And they made this story possible. And the next journalist will contact them. And this time now they want to know what the story is about, what kind of a character are they looking for. So like a movie, they hold audition. And then they look the right person and say like, oh yeah, we found someone who grew up in Somalia, joined the piracy, made a lot of money, came to Nairobi and invest that money into real estate. And I don't know if you saw like a years back, you had this story of, oh, Somali pirates are investing in real estate in Nairobi. And that is how this story came to the media. And now everyone wanted actually to tell that story. So now they'll call the same fixer who knows all these guys who came and invested in the country. But in reality, he was, you know, making it up. And these guys were actors. They were not pirates. Yeah. So and at that time, I was a lot involved filming stories in Somalia, especially pirates. So at the time, 2011, 2012, I was shooting a documentary called The Last Hijack, which is a future documentary, like an hour and a half. And the guys that came to Nairobi to do a documentary about Somali pirates, they were looking, you know, like people who knew more about. So just to talk to you, hey, I'm doing this documentary, and journalists share their stories sometimes. So they invited me to a interview. They followed a character for like 3 months. And at the end of the shoot, they wanted to do like 2-3 hours interview. So I came and I sat there just listening to the story of this kid. In Somalia, we have different accents. You know, like if, like in Kenya, if a Kikuyu, you cannot, you know,
glance?
Yeah, exactly. A Kikuyu is a Kikuyu. It's not Kalenjin. It's a Somali. Everyone has their own accent, their own, you know, dialect, language also. So as I was listening to this kid, it didn't make sense for me. Like it didn't add up. He was explaining that he grew up in Puntland, which is the north of Somalia. And he was a shoe shiner, and suddenly these guys came with a lot of money. And first he said like he didn't want it to be part of it, but at the end he joined them and made a lot of money. He was too scared, you know, to spend the money in Somalia, so he fled to Kenya, and you know, put his money in a safe country. But all that was fake. It didn't add up for me. So I walked to him and just asked him, hey, why are you lying to these people? They trusted you. They want to tell your story. So he said, the white man loves my story and I love his money. I love his money. So so he almost like a threatening, like say like, fuck off, you know, like don't mess up for me. Of course, I didn't keep my mouth shut. I told this guy, say, you're interviewing a fake character. They couldn't believe it. It's like, how is that possible? On top of that, the character they are interviewing, they need a translator. So this kid, he grew up in Kenya, and everyone in Kenya speaks English. So he said, yeah, he came from Somalia, he doesn't speak English. And that is how he employs the fixer, because the fixer is now the translator, because they are not allowed to give money to someone they interview. Yeah. But they are able to give the fixer money who fixed this and put all this together, and the fixer will share his, you know, money with the interviewee.
Wow.
So that gave the idea of Ayanle to you know, to find out how it is, you know, like to follow a fixer. So the story was actually more of the fixer. And then as I you know, go along with the story, I try to find out more about this fixer. And found out he was featured in New York Times front page. Wow. He was in a documentary shown in 11 countries, a Danish documentary. So he was all over the place.
Was all over the world.
Yeah, he was there. And then when we asked these guys, like, how did you come up with all these things? They said, like, yeah, the white man is offering money, and you know, we we are hustlers. So we found out that this is a way for us to make some, you know,
Becoming fake actors.
Yeah. So they said, like, they got a script, they were casted for a movie, and they were doing a movie.
But this making is money.
They say, like,
we tell the white man a story.
Exactly. His words were, we tell the white man a story. He give us money. So what is the problem? But say, like, you are lying. You are telling this man that you are a pirate and all. You know, you've struggled, and even they have helped him marry a woman.
What?
And the woman was his sister, basically. She was part of the, you know, scam. Yeah, she was also casted, but it was his sister to play his future wife.
Oh, God.
And so we've pitched that story to Channel 4, and then, you know,
Could it be the one that was talking about the fake pirate?
Yeah.
Pirates.
Yeah, that was
and
the story.
That documentary.
Yes, I shot that documentary. Yeah.
So you were behind that. Okay,
yes, I was behind that, yeah. So, you know.
This is Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, Dermadew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, Dermadew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
So now I had a fixer and journalist that are trying to get, you know, story. Then I thought, you know, like, okay, you need a story to make a film. And found out that one night I was with a cousin of mine, and in Nairobi at around 9, police comes, you know, like, and then they'll search for kids, their ID. And if you don't have, they'll take you to police station, but they'll never take you to the police station. Before you reach there, they'll ask you now, hey, do you have plans? Because that means if you have no plans, we'll put you in the cell, and then you'll stay there for a day or two, and then they let you go. So nobody wants to stay in prison.
Yeah.
And even if you don't have money, they know you know someone who does.
Yeah.
So they'll give you a phone and tell you, call your people.
Oh, that's why they call it plan.
Yes.
Because they know if you don't have money, you have a plan, you can call somebody.
Exactly. So the question is, like, they don't ask you, like, hey, give us money, no? Mm. You don't have a plan, no? Mm. Because the next station is the police station. And once you get there, that means whatever money you pay, it has to be legit. And also share with, you know, the rest. So instead of paying like maybe $10, now it becomes maybe $100. So nobody wants that. So it's cheaper to, you know, pay some money before you even reach to the police station. So when I got that, it's like, okay, fine. Now I have that part. Mm-hmm. And we have also the police, the corrupt police, and also the good police guy who's going along with this colleague, but doesn't believe in what he's doing, like arresting these kids and asking for money. So we had the good cop, the bad cop together, who are influencing each other. So now we've changed the story from pirates to Al-Shabaab because of the tension in Nairobi, the Westgate attack and all these things. So we thought, if he fakes a story of Al-Shabaab, that is a different kind of, you are dealing with anti-terror, and they have a license to, you know, arrest you, and with no court or nothing, they don't need any papers. Like, once you are a terrorist, you have no rights. So, like the police, even the anti-terror group, they use, you know, that card of terrorism to get you behind bars or to get money from you. So I feel like that is more interesting now. So let's, the story is real, the faking then, but now he's, Al-Shabaab commander who is, giving interview.
Yeah.
So then it's like, okay, what if that comes out on TV and someone recognizes this kid and he's in trouble? because first he thinks, oh, nobody's recognized your face, and then you cover your face, and you know, you tell your story.
Yeah.
You left, and you know, because of security, they can't show the face. But then there's always someone that knows you. That's why he cut his hand, and when the police arrested, you know, he covered his face, but he didn't cover his hand. And it was easier to spot, like, oh, that hand we recognize. I've seen that hand before. Yeah, even though he has a mask and covered his face, but it's still recognizable.
Yeah,
you know who that person is. So then, having all this, you needed a way to connect to the story. So this is now the time where we, you know, go to easily to the police station, you know, to figure it out, you know, how the process is. Like even this Propox, like the same car the police uses, you know, to put, you know,
these
kids. Yeah, mm-hmm. After arrest, they put it like in the trunk of this Propox, well known. So whenever they see, they know, they start running.
Yeah,
that's why you had the shots where. Out of nowhere, boom, immediately there is a police coming in.
And they, you don't know how they knew it, but they know.
They know, because they have all these corner guys standing there, and then they see, and then that is when they say, like, police, and you know, start running.
Mm-hmm.
So we had that, and then going to the police station, I did observation, like, how people were desperate, how the, you know, bribery went. You know, how they were passing the money from one to another cab and negotiating, like, hey, you're going to pay like $100,000, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, you know.
Yeah.
So having that now, it was only a matter of, you know, connecting the story and having one person as the lead. So all these stories are based on real stories, but not on one person, like it happened to John, it happened to Ali, of Abdi, and all that put together on, you know, the pressure is on Ayanle now.
Oh, he's got a month to be Ayanle. So yes. Just one story.
Yeah, and also the name Ayanle, it means the lucky one.
The lucky one, I like that.
Yeah,
I like that.
But Ayanle himself, he is unlucky. Like it, anything he does.
The way he ended up was not lucky, was it?
No, he wasn't. Yeah,
to the movie. Of
course. No, but throughout, like every situation that he's in, it's unlucky. You know, like whether he, because he had an audition. So if the police didn't arrest him, he would have, you know, got the job, an actor.
Yeah.
If he didn't leave the taxi, and then bait his taxi driver, he wouldn't be caught. You know,
that's true. I remember.
You know, it's an action and reaction. Yeah. So whatever you do,
but you can't blame
him, consequences.
I know
you can't blame.
When he was, when this guy was talking about where to go, they were stuck.
Yes.
And then he saw a boda, a motorbike.
Yeah.
And he jumps on it because he was stuck.
He was stuck. But then, you know, the taxi driver. He didn't actually move forward. He just stepped into the taxi, and then going nowhere, he jumps out.
Yeah.
So to him, he didn't use his services. Like, you're standing the same spot that you were standing.
Yeah.
I got into your cab, and then I'm off.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. Mm-hmm. The moment you come into my taxi, so you owe me. You have to pay me.
Yeah, I've seen that in London way back with the black minicabs.
Yeah.
These are all of them, right? Most of them. Before you begin your journey, you get on it. You find it £3. I'm like, we haven't started the journey yet. And it's not, I've never been told I can pay VAT inside a minicab. Why is it £3? We haven't even started, And one driver used to tell me, it's the way we do business. I said, we have to start from that, you know, like, but we have no agreement on it. So I can understand the frustrations of Ayanle, because you're stuck, you're not going anywhere. You see a boda, motorbike. You just come out, because that one can navigate through heavy traffic and get you somewhere, because you have to go get where you're going.
Yeah. Ayanle's story is every young Somali kid's story in Nairobi, Eastleigh especially. So, everything that happens to him happened, you know, like to another young boy in Eastleigh.
So we now know, in terms of this movie, of course, it's really been acknowledged and by lots of people after the premiership of it in London, and I think it's going to premiere other places as well.
In November, they are going to release more cinemas in the UK, Leicester, Birmingham, throughout the UK. And after that, we also want to do it in the other parts of Europe, like Sweden, Denmark, Norway. Of course, Canada and the States, New Zealand, Australia. So wherever the Somalis are, wherever the Africans are, it's already on Netflix, and everyone in Africa can watch it on Netflix, but it's only in Africa.
Okay.
And even though when we've made this film, we've put a lot of time and energy into creating a sound. So it is a film to watch on cinema.
It's a film to watch on cinema.
Yeah, and every time I showed someone like on TV, and I was like, nah. And then in cinema, I'm so excited.
Because I can't wait to go watch it on cinema. Because there was premieres.
Yeah, we've watched it on the first day, Saturday, we've
the
watched it, right?
One, yeah.
And that was just in stereo sound. And I was so irritated to watch it. And now we've watched it on... Because you have so many sound coming from different corners of the...
Much better effects.
Yeah, so every little sound is there. But then on the stereo, you don't hear a lot of the sound. And the audience don't know. They still like the film, but for me, it's like, oh no, you're missing this.
Having produced, you're like, you are missing what I want.
You're missing this, you're missing that. Yeah. And also the image, so this is a cinema format, so it's good for people to go and watch on the cinema.
Yeah.
It's a different experience.
And then again, when we talk about this movie, of course, a lot of creativity. Let's go back a bit. In terms of your mention of fake pirates, I mean, I'll never forget watching that documentary on Channel 4, Fake Pirates. I watched
Fake
that.
Fake Pirates, yeah.
And I was moved by how journalists, an international journalist, should be renowned for proper research before they tell stories to the rest of the world. I'm an international journalist, and I respect where I get my source of news from.
Yeah.
But I was shocked to see how international journalists get it so wrong when they come to Africa.
Yeah.
And this is the thing whereby this group of fake pirates who have become actors and they are hustlers, they are pitching stories to international journalists who are running their stories as factual and as real, thinking that they are dealing with real pirates, but they are not dealing with real pirates. Mm-hmm. They are hustlers and they are actors, but they never got that. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah,
as someone who does this, as someone who is doing film, as someone who values facts because you've done documentaries, how does that make you feel?
No, so for me, I don't blame the journalist because if you go to a country where you don't understand the language, normally you're dependent on recommendations from your colleagues, and if a colleague says like, "Hey, I've worked with that person; it's legit," and he will get you, he'll find characters that you're looking for. Because normally they came with a story and they're looking for certain characters. But what they don't know is that this person is fake. So there's no way for them to know. And the language... and there's also a language barrier.
Yeah.
That's why I always say that, when I go shoot in Somalia or maybe other parts where I understand the language, it's I get the nuances, I know when someone is telling me fake story. And also they know it because they need to communicate between them the language.
Yeah.
So if I tell you example, before we've done the story, we did a spell, we did a research. So we've called this fixer, and a friend of mine, a white from the States, was acting as a journalist. So we put a cameras in the room, and we asked him to bring the interviewee to us. So he brought like six guys. So I am in the other room because he knows this white person don't speak English, don't speak Somali. So I can hear it. The microphone is there. I'm in the other room. And these guys are queuing. And I say like, what do we tell him? And he said like, just say something. I'll translate. Just say something. So these kids that have been collected from the streets, they have been told, okay, you're going to tell a story. You get bait. That's it. They don't know what the story is. So they don't even need to know what the story. They just stand there and say something. So the white man is sitting there, my friend then, and says like, who's this? And he's like, say something. And then he mumbles stuff. He translates like, oh, he was born in that city and he grew up and he joined the piracy, da, 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 da. And he says, oh, I like his story. So that is the person that we're looking for. Actually, an audition for a story, an actor. So that is how he does. So these kids were just picked from the street.
Wow. Not even experience of swimming?
No.
Just being at the seaside.
Yeah, because like he knows they need a translator. So he's the one translating, and mainly that is for when they are fighting. So when it's a video, it's a different story. Even in Ayala, you've seen it, like when they do it for the video, he translates exactly, but then he already practiced. He knows what to say. But the first time, they just take a note and then explain, like, oh, who you are, where you're from. So, oh, that is the exact person that we're looking for. And, yeah.
Amazing. So when we come to news content, news depictions in the news, mm-hmm. especially in the international world, we are watching London, we are watching in Washington, D.C., or mm-hmm. New York, or even Berlin, name it. And we believe that this news from Africa is real. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll give you another example. So away from the fake pirates, I'm now focused a bit more on journalistic practice and depictions of what we see in the stories that get covered. I've seen also another story that a news channel, international news channel, goes to Kenya slightly before elections, and the journalist goes with the mindset that there will be again violence. But the young people who are Kenyans knew what the journalist was suspecting. And you can hear them speaking in Swahili. Oh, let us burn these tires and yeah, let them fume. Yeah? And yeah. In a minute, they say the violence has already started. But they know there's no violence.
No, there's
there won't be violence.
Yeah.
How does international media get it so wrong? And what can we do to, I mean, from your perspective, to get real, cover real news, but stop misleading the world?
Yeah. Now, I think it's less difficult to fool people right now because everyone is a journalist. If you're filming the scene, you have 10 other phones filming the same thing. Yeah. So you can say, you know, like, oh, the violence has started, but you get another source to verify that it's true or not true. So it's getting more difficult for journalists to fool anyone. Years back, the only source you had was the TV, and they could edit and you know, manipulate the way they wanted. But even now, as you are recording, there's a life, and you get, you know, the whole story. So there's no way someone can take things out. And that's limiting, you know, some of the news that used to, you know, reach the bigger audience. For us as Africans living in the West, of course, we are dependent on the news, but there are many sources to get the actual, you know, facts on the ground.
You can check facts, isn't it?
You can check facts. Oh, yes, yes.
It's a good problem in a way because...
it's a good like problem, saying, yeah, yeah.
Like you were saying before, we counted on just one camera from one international channel who has done the filming, they've done the editing, they're telling us what a story should be.
Yeah.
But nowadays, right, it's just... You do a story from a particular corner in Africa, and actually it goes live through the social media before the channel.
yes, it goes there before the channel. Yeah,
so
yeah.
So
it's immediately, it's instant. You know, on Twitter, like I don't even watch actually news on TV anymore. You get your sources from, you know, from the ground.
Colorful radio.
Colorful radio.
There's a research that was done, I think, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, worldwide. And actually, their conclusion was that Kenya led the world by using TikTok for news. It is amazing.
Absolutely.
So when you look at the numbers that go for TikTok for news, is higher than the ones who turn on TV channel to watch news.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so it's the good thing about that people get the real stories now is like before, they used to have one channel of like a one source of the news. When I used to when I started, you know, filming Africa, like I came to Nairobi and Zambia. For me, you know, like as an African, you know, like I am used to a certain image. And then when you now, as a cameraman, go there and get the chance to show the real, and you film, and then you're excited. And then you're like, oh, I want to this is like Europe, you know, this is beautiful. So your focus is on all the beautiful things that you would have seen on TV before, but you couldn't. Now you are in a position to show that. And then you go back to the TV station with this image and they look at it and like, yeah, what is it? So like, yeah, but this is, you know, the Africa, what I filmed. But there is a way to cover Africa for certain news. And it's not their fault. It is the expectation. Like if you go now to Dubai, I'm sure the photos you are taking are not from the old market and all that. It's just the bling and it's like the beauty in the buildings, because that is the image you have from, you know, Dubai.
Yeah.
Because like the other Dubai doesn't count, because if you want to show someone you've been to Dubai, you need to show that. But then you want to show the same story from Africa, they need to see the zebra, you know, like the red soil, you know, like like. So.
But
when
in
someone,
news time is the informed news. It's informed,
yes, informed
by most of what has been
but
not really great.
It's been years, you know, like it's not 1, 2, 3, but these kids grew up from, you know, a young age. That's the image they used to see. If I tell you this little thing is, I grew up in Holland. And at the age of 14, I used to hate going to school because every Friday they come with this UNICEF and Oxfam Help Child in Africa, and we are going to collect money you know, to help children in Africa. And many years later, my daughter that is now 14 is doing exactly the same thing, collecting money for Africa on Fridays. I told her, we are going to Africa, and she said, do I have to take food with me? And I was like, why? Because like, yeah, she said, kids in Africa are starving, they have no food. Why? Because, you know, we collect money every Friday to help children in Africa. So I don't want to eat their food. I will take my food from here to Kenya. So imagine that. Also, you know, cameramen who grew up in that era, so when they come, they're still programmed on that image that's engraved in their mind. It's the way they see Africa. It's not their fault. If you want to shoot in Somalia, you want to see boots, you want to see, you know, bullet holes, you want to see guys, you know, chewing, big eyes, you know, like, and then chaos. But that is, you know,
lucky camels at the back.
Yeah. So you want to see, you know, like a bazooka hit on a wall or all the, you know, fractions and shrapnels, and it has to give that image. Oh, that is it. The same way if you go to Libya, you want to see that. You know, you go to India, you know the kind of image you're looking for, just enable for you to show your friends of, you know, the other, where you left your country, that you need to show that image. Otherwise, it's not working. If I tell you a small example, there's an American friend of mine came to Nairobi, and then we went out for dinner, and the environment that we were, you couldn't tell what is in South Africa, London, or, you know. And he was calling his mom on video. It's like, oh, mom, yeah, I've arrived in Africa. And she's like, boy, don't lie to me. You're not in Africa. Where did you go? And then the next day, together, we went to another place and then showed, you know, another FaceTime. It's like, ah, okay, where were you last night? You were not in Africa.
Yeah.
And because for her, that was not Africa because of the image.
It's the image that is portrayed. The image that image gets portrayed.
Yeah.
I think for many years, not a lot of media... because happens to be, we know the world through the media.
True.
And when it comes to the world media, we talk about news channels, news dissemination. Mm-hmm. The focus on Africa has not been on the greatness of Africa. It's been more to do with wars, earthquakes, catastrophes, famine.
Mm.
And those are the images that dominate. No one comes and takes you to DR Congo, which is the size of Eastern Europe, and tells you that this country is full of minerals.
Yeah.
Or takes you to somewhere like Niger and tells you that the uranium that is used in nuclear powers, actually in the Western capitals, comes from this country.
Yeah.
No one will do that.
Yeah.
And depictions of Africa sometimes are all mixed up. Mm-hmm. Like we have shared in your film, Ayanle, we can also see the fake pirates. I mean, I'm so happy you are the one behind the fake pirate story
also,
because
yeah.
it made a mockery of any news that was covered about the pirates.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, these guys have been using these guys as the main source of their information. But this is just a group of actors.
Yeah.
Making money.
Making money.
Easy money.
Yeah.
Quick
easy
back.
Money.
Yep. Yeah?
Yeah. To them, they're going for audition.
But these guys, they do auditions. Who
yes.
can become a good actor as a pirate? But you are Western journalist going to cover pirate story in Africa, and this is the guy you're going to interview, and you tell the world this is a real pirate and this is what they happened.
Yeah.
I mean, all the depiction which I look into about Africa, about what amounts to Africa, has come through the news, and the news has never been really such a great such a great depiction of Africa or Africans.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what you just shared. There's a time I attended a meeting in the House of Lords. There's a campaign that came, was funded by one of the charity working in Africa.
Yeah.
They were saying that the moment you, whether you call your charity whichever name, but you want to get money from Africa, from volunteers or donations, stop using African children to make money. So it's like, if I'm a child in Africa, and you film me going to drink, fetch dirty water, and you're saying that there's no water, let's have money to get these people clean water. But why did you allow a child to go in dirty water? You know what I mean?
The choices
a child should make, the decision or the decisions they should make, or even being shown with all these funny, you know, tears and whatever and flies on their face. Would you like your child to be depicted like that?
Yeah.
So the campaign from there, what I'm talking about was stop using African children in raising money efforts, because when they grow up, they'll hate the pictures of themselves.
Oh, no, yeah, no, no, not only that, but then they're also, you know, part of the way the world sees you. We've done also another commentary in Kibera. People were angry sometimes because one woman said it feels like we are in a zoo because we are actually in our houses washing clothes and these people are walking around with a camera and, you know, recording us. But it's also not to blame them only. You know, in Nairobi, what I've seen is you go to Westgate and all these fancy places and it says no camera allowed. You cannot film. But journalists, the cameras are all allowed to Kibera and Eastleigh and all these dirty places. So you, with the world-based money, Dubai, the reason you get to see only the bling is because they pay money for you to film the beauty only. So you get paid to bring your film in Dubai. But in Nairobi, they don't give you any access to those fancy places, but then you get all the access to the, you know,
which is not balanced,
it's not balanced.
But all these people in ghettos.
There was a project we wanted to do in Nairobi city center, and they made it so difficult. At the end of the day, these guys left and I went to South Africa, cheaper to do it and to show, you know, like Joburg. So now you've missed a chance to have, you know, Nairobi in an international stage without you even paying it. But they wanted money, they wanted to be paid or fuck off here. You're not going to film here.
Yeah.
So you're not contributing, you know, like into spreading the good image of Africa. You're limiting and only giving access to the ghettos. So, of course, people then know only ghetto and safari. That is, if you just now Google Kenya, all you see is safari.
Yeah, it's all.
Because you're allowing, you know, like, that's, you're promoting the safari, but you're not promoting the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I think all these men in a power position needs to rethink and reimagine Africa and, like, how are we going to, you know, to sell our country and limit all these NGOs where you only, you know, get a bad name out of it. You may get some money, but at the end of the day, it's your name that's been tarnished, you know, like it is, you know, whatever image they're sending. If people are collecting money on your behalf and using your photos, your videos, that will ever stay in the minds of, you know, the people who are giving the money, the taxpayers, who are even tired, like, oh, are we going to continue giving money to Africa? Are we going to do this? So whatever money you get, even if it's billions, it's not worth it. It's really not worth it because a kid that grew up in Europe always feels less than a kid in, you know, that is a European. Because every time you see, you know, that kid, it reminds you that it's me, actually. It may not be me, but it's an African child with a fly on his face and says, you know, like, he needs money, he needs help. So how do you want to compete with people, you know, when you're hungry and looked down upon?
Like, and it's a mind game, isn't it?
It's a marketing, and then you're marketing your hunger. You're marketing, you know, like, there's so many beautiful things in Africa. There's a lot of money in Africa. There's beautiful places, but you're only marketing, you know, like your ugly side. You're only marketing your, you know, your hunger, you know, like your neediness. And long term, that has an effect.
Colorful radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At Dermashack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, Dermadew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, Dermadew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
Was it challenging to film the movie in Nairobi, basically? Because if there are places you can't film, you are not allowed.
Yeah.
Was it an issue or a challenge?
No, so we had two challenges. One is the film we've done during the pandemic, COVID time. So we've started the production. We were in production 11 days before the pandemic started. So 11 days into production, we had to stop everything. And at the time, nobody knew what the future holds, you know, like what is going to happen, because you don't know there is a pandemic, whether it's going to take 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you have no idea. So it's like, okay, now shut it down. And people were running back to their homes. So the one that came from US, the one that came from UK, they wanted to go back. So imagine being working months and months pre-production, renting, you know, Airbnb houses, you know, like getting all this gear into the country and then doing all this, you know, beautiful things. But then, I mean, like getting all these people into the country. And just 11 days in production, you have to stop. So we did that. And then, you know, after we stayed a week and we've seen that there is no going back, this thing will, you know, take a long time. So they went back home. And then we've waited and waited and waited. And then 8 months later, no, we were allowed to go back. But then you had the problem of, you know, people gaining weight
In the pandemic.
Yeah, because like people stayed at home. People stayed at home and then kept eating. And then, you know, like there's not much of movement because you weren't even allowed to go outside most of the time. So, you know, depression was also, you know, part of the pandemic. So people kept eating. And then you had this skinny kid, you filmed, you know, and then he's now fat and has a belly. And the girl gained twice the kgs. And then she's now big and then a little choppy face. You can't even, you know, tell the difference. Even if you watch Ayane, if you pay attention to it, you'll see that, you know, like the two faces here and there. And that's why we had also a scene where mom was feeding him, you know, like this time jump where he's like getting fed. Mm-hmm. So that we are able to connect the next shot, because like his face is a bit choppy. And then this one, he's so skinny. So we needed, you know, like a,
a bridge.
To bridge from that to the next. Yeah. So that was a challenge. And also a lot of the scenes of Ayanle, were, you know, outside, you know, exterior shots, not too many of interiors. So we had the market and also night scenes as the police are raiding at these places and, you know, arresting these kids. It had to happen outside on the streets. So there was a, even though they were allowed to go back on set, after 9, there was a curfew. So you're allowed to work, but 9. And then, you know, you can't shoot something. It's between like a 7, because the sun goes down at 7.
Yeah.
It's like just 1 hour, 2 hours. You have like from 7 to 9, it doesn't work. So we've requested a special permit for us to be outside at night. And then we had the challenge of populating the place, you know, like population, like, because everyone is gone. So you needed to fill that street with, you know, your own people. And you weren't allowed to have more than 40 persons on set. And the crew is only already close to, you know, 30. And you have the extras, you know, because it has to look. So everyone you saw at that scene where the police is chasing Ayanle is all extras. And and even say that, you know, like if you come at 9, it means you have to stay at 2 up to 4 a.m. because there's no traffic. Even if they go home, they'll be stopped. So we wait up to 4 where the curfew is taken off and then you can continue shooting. Yeah, so that was a challenge. And second challenge that we had is like we were using, we filmed in Eastleigh, and not many films are shot in Eastleigh, and people are not really familiar with film and the film gear and equipment, all the you know fancy things they did use on the set. You know, they don't see that. Then you go ask for a location. You want to shoot on a location. You know, send someone to talk to the owners, and they're like, "Oh, fine, fine. You know, you can use it, just film." And then the morning you come with your crew and gear, and then you know, you have a generator. You know, you have vans, cars, the whole place. And then they're like, "Whoa, hold up! No, we didn't agree. This is what's happening. You know, like you know, we can't do business this way. You know." But yeah. We've talked, and you know, we wanted to use this part of you know your shop, and it's like but I thought you guys were coming with just one camera and do like interview.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of crew, but especially you know, like you have so many cars, especially the generator and the cables and all the cameras, and then you have it for them it was like, whoa, what is this? And most of the time you are negotiating again. And maybe offer more money, and sometimes it's completely nothing. They don't want to be part of it. That means you've lost that day, and you've spent money and tried to find another location. And that was an issue for us.
So they can say no last minute.
Yeah, they can say yeah. So even if you had a license, because of they didn't understood what it means to say yes to a film, and also it takes maybe a whole day to shoot 2 minutes of film. Because like you are dealing with extras, they're walking around, people are standing, yeah. And
you have to do retakes.
Multiple takes because now you're dealing with multiple stops and people are moving and you have to block your shot accordingly, and you have to repeat that multiple times because you're not working with 10 cameras that capture every movement. So you need to do like people walking and sitting and talking and the dialogue and all that. So it may take like a whole day. And I'm saying that we also had the issue of the extras itself, because now we wanted to have Somali extras. It's very easy to find extras in Kenyans, because there is an agent, and these people, they've been doing quite some time. They know when they're extra, they'll come, they stand there the whole day, they walk, they sit, they walk, they sit. All you have to do is like, okay, back to one, we're going to do it again. But the Somali community, that was completely something else. And after you've asked them to do twice or three times, they'll tell you, I'm not going to do this anymore. I didn't sign for this. And then they walk out. But you've already shot your wide shot and your medium shot, and now you're going for the close, and the person is gone.
Terrible.
And that was actually our main issue. So our casting agent came with an idea of like, hey, extras, you don't need to use Somalis. Because we have also, coastal people from the coast that look like Somali. Yeah, okay. All they have to do is just even like, dress.
Yeah.
Like, so you had the extras you see walking behind, I think maybe one or two are Somalis, but the rest, even in the whole demonstration, we couldn't get, Somalis to demonstrate. Because for them, it's like, I'm here. You take your shot, I'm working out. No, you have to stay the whole day. So like, it's not going to happen.
We
are very hard-headed,
My goodness, amazing. Great work. I think your movie has really been well-received. Mm. So you said in the UK probably it's going to be premiering in different other cities?
Yeah. First is UK in November, where they're going to show multiple cinemas within the country. After that, let's see what the distribution company says.
Sure.
They are organizing this, yeah.
Any hopes to premiere in Africa?
So we've done a premiere in Nairobi.
Okay.
The film is well received in Nairobi. Also, there's a Clasha Awards, which is actually the biggest in Kenya. And the film was nominated for 15 awards within the country and won four of it.
Clasha,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With the Kenya Film Commission.
15 nominations, wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And out of 15, we've won four of it, including a best director and then best makeup, art direction. So the other one, and a screenplay, yeah.
Wow.
So also I think also there was the Nigerian African Academy Award.
Okay.
Yeah, also nominated for I think it was five. Yeah.
Five nominations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've won one of it.
No, I one thing I like about it is an eye opener that the media, international journalists, I am one of them. You have to do extra work.
Yes, you have to
research,
do. Absolutely.
To get facts right.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The moment we run with stereotypes or communities, we're not serving the world the best way. Mm. If we run with misinformation as part of disseminating our news, then we're not serving the world.
True.
So it's a good thought-provoking narrative there.
Yeah.
Check your facts,
yes. Yeah,
so you don't end up feeding the world
fake news.
Fake news coming from fake pirates
who
are fake actors. How to make quick buck.
But also, you know, a lot of movies are based on, you know, news items or maybe papers that came. So they get that story, or maybe a book. So it's only this stream is mainly. And then they get all these things, and I've done that too. You know, like a lot of true stories in the film is based on a news item.
Yes.
So maybe even that news is even fake, and I'm fooled myself.
But you are safer. Because film is work of fiction.
Yeah. So I don't really blame the journalists, but I blame the community that allows, allows, you know, to feed these news agents fake news.
It's
so
a
when
problem
we see
to society too.
Yeah, yeah. But when we see, I could have kept quiet, you know, when I saw these guys were lying, and I said like, okay, I want them to get their money, and I'm not going to say anything. But I chose to say these guys are fake. They're giving you wrong, you know, information.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is not, you know, the right person you need to interview. And I think as a community, if we focus more on, okay, what is the world is showing about us, and we don't correct it, it's going out as it is. So if there are other journalists who see these things and they do something about it, and I think we're better off, all of us.
It's all of us.
Yeah.
Responsibility.
It's collective responsibility.
Government, people,
and can, you know, yeah. Even if I go to South Africa and other places, I'm also dependent on local journalists, fixers.
Yeah.
So whatever they tell me, I don't understand when they're communicating.
Need to be ethical,
and
as well.
Yeah, ethical. So the only thing I can do is ask someone else, like, hey, I'm working with that person, is he legit? And ask the person, another person, about this person, if it's legit. And if three people tell you this person is good, then most likely it is. But sometimes it is the person you know, and then they take the word of their friend and colleague who already worked with this person, say like, oh, I've worked with that person, it's incredible, knows, you know, like how to find everyone.
amazing.
And then, you know, knowing that, you're depending on this because you've been connected to your friend, through your friend.
It's true.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing. I would love to talk to you forever. Our listeners have been speaking to Hamed Farah, he's the director of Ayanle. Great movie that's been premiered in different capitals. And yes, based in Kenya, but a fantastic movie. Yeah, keep an eye and make an effort to watch.